Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati Sports Edition. Surprise you guys, Jason Williams is back with me this week as my co-host, as Burl is otherwise engaged this week, and Jason's always willing to join me, and he had a great idea for a guest. I'm super excited. We will be talking to Scott Burson, and he is a professor, but he is also an author from Athens, Ohio. So you guys might be able to guess where we're going with this. He wrote a book. It just came out, I think, this week, maybe, or last, From Bulldog to Bengal, the Joe Burrow story through the eyes of his hometown. And who better to interview Scott with me than Jason Williams, who's from the same area. Hi, Jason.
Hey, I had it on mute. I guess I had it on mute, so sorry about that. Glad to be back on the podcast. It seems like just a few weeks ago we were doing the podcast. Oh, wait, we were. So
I know. Great to be back. I love it. We had a good time that time. And I'm sure we'll tell some stories here. I'm very excited. I'm going to tell everybody later about female empowerment with some women's activewear. And we're going to talk about Joe Burrow. And as long as we're talking about the Bengals, what's the big news this week?
The stadium issue, Sherry, comes to the forefront.
Not a surprise, but what is the surprise? We still don't have any details.
I mean, the news, though, is that the county is now has basically put the Bengals on notice publicly that they expect them to pay more this time around. That's no surprise. That is the trend in the NFL, that the teams in the NFL are expected to put more money into stadiums nowadays. And certainly this is going to be a very interesting few years here as the lease runs out in 2026. And, you know, Alicia Reese and Denise Driehaus, the commissioners, really came out earlier this week and said, hey, need the Bengals to step up. There's going to be obviously a bunch of different partners from the state, the county, the NFL, and the Bengals to put money in to make improvements to the stadium, which some estimates can put it up around $1 billion between regular maintenance and upgrades, renovations. So we don't know that full final cost yet, but that's basically what it's appearing, and that's what's happening across the NFL as well. Stadiums that were built right around the turn of the 21st century, right around that 2000 mark, are looking at upgrades of around that $500 million to $1 billion point. And that's what happened in Nashville, Sherry. They got a study back that said this was going to be around, in their stadium opened a year before Cincinnati's, that said it's going to be around $1 billion to make upgrades. And so in Nashville, they decided, well, let's just go ahead and build a brand new stadium for over $2 billion. This is happening across the NFL, among those, that wave of stadiums that were built right there in the late 90s, early 2000s.
So it was nice of them to say that. Okay, so they're going to, you know, be on the side of the taxpayer. It sounded good. I believe the word they used was hope. And I really kind of took that as like, it needs to be action, not words. You can start this conversation with words, although we've known this is coming for a long time. I really, as someone whose job is to be a watchdog for taxpayers, expect this to be a public process. As someone who's covering the railroad deal right now, which was not a public process, everything you'll be reading going forward about this railroad deal, sure, like what's happening with it right this second, but we are really, I'm going back and being like, here's what happened. This process needs to be public. This process needs to be tough. And it needs to be, you know, not these private conversations between the county and the Bengals. Like, we know what's happening. Like, it's not a secret. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what the action is and not just, you know, some lip service here at the beginning. And I'm happy to believe them right now. I'm happy to say, great, they do have the taxpayers back. Certainly they promised this when they were running for office. But I am waiting to really see. And Scott Wortman, our county reporter, has been all over this, you know, for a very long time. But this doesn't need to be things that come out later. This needs to be really chronicled in real time about what is happening with taxpayer money.
No doubt about it. My column today, as we record here on Thursday morning on Cincinnati.com, is basically that, you know, the same old is no longer acceptable. That the commissioners the taxpayers have to demand the commissioners do better this time around. It's a whole new group of commissioners, certainly, obviously, than over 20 years ago. But this was this is the deal that's going that currently is in place is regarded by many experts, many media folks, many national publications as one of the worst deals for taxpayers in American sports history. We can't make the same mistakes again. But it's on the commissioners and it's on the taxpayers of Hamilton County to demand better, or, you know, there could be, you know, there could be another bad deal done. If people do not demand better this time, people being taxpayers, demand that of the commissioners, the elected officials, the bureaucrats that are involved in from the county in this deal, then you know, the taxpayers could take it on the chin again.
Winning does not change what is happening on the business side of things. That's the other thing, because I follow the Bengals. I'm very excited. We're going to talk about Joe Burrow today and this book. And we are very lucky that we have Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, and this team is doing great. And it's so exciting, and it's brought everyone together. But that does not, supersede taxpayer money responsibility.
Yeah. And you make a great point, too. And we're talking about Joe Burrow. And I think it's really important. I know it's hard for some fans, or if it kind of the two cross, there's a lot of Hamilton County taxpayers that are Cincinnati Bengals fans and diehard Cincinnati Bengals fans. It's important to separate the two, the on-field performance, the football itself of the Cincinnati Bengals has been fantastic the last few seasons. But you got to separate that out. And I know it's hard to do, and it's not hard for me to do as a journalist, but it's hard for a lot of fans. But I want to make clear that, you know, I've been pretty tough on the Bengals on the stadium thing. But you separate out, and I can silo these things out. It's important to do that, that the business side of things and the stadium dealings, shouldn't be sort of crossed over with the football side. Now, I know those all can be crossed over, as the Bengals, for example, if I own the Bengals, and I probably would do this too, I would expect the Bengals to use that the fact that they're winning and they're incredibly popular right now as a negotiating tactic in this, to say, hey, there might be other towns in this country or that would love to have a team that's, you know, playing one of the best in the NFL the last few seasons. But otherwise, the two are really separate entities. How they do business regarding the stadium with the county versus the on-field product of the Joe Burrows and the Jamar Chases and throwing touchdowns and all that stuff.
I think we should leave it at that. I do, as you were ticking off the names of Bengals players, I do want to encourage everyone to read the Inquirer's Joe Mixon coverage. He was recharged, and that's going to go through the court process coming up here, but you did write a column on that. And Jason, you guys, we read Jason's columns as a politics reporter, and it really dovetailed with this podcast, but his columns, you know, they're not to be missed. So I'm encouraging people to read today's column about the stadium negotiations and go back and take a peek at his mix and one too.
Thanks, and great, and back at you, Sherry. Great digging on you, and really watchdogging that Joe Mixon story with the city and the city police for a couple months now, obviously, since that first came out in early February. And there's a nice story you did on that last week. And, you know, we were ahead of the game on that story, an important story. So I'll, you know, I'm sure you're continuing to do your reporting on that.
All right, well, let's bring on Scott then, and let's talk some fun football.
All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome a Southeast Ohio native, Athens native, and the author of the new book about Joe Burrow, just out, From Bulldog to Bengal, author Scott Burson. Scott, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, let's jump right into it. You are an Athens native. You wrote a great book about an Athens native. Talk about just the process of you. This is the first book about Joe Burrow that I'm aware of. And what led you to do this book?
Yeah, I'll give you a little backstory on it. It actually didn't start out as a book on Joe. Maybe surprising to hear that, but there were several Athens High School graduates who've gone on to national prominence. So my idea about a year ago was that Joe would represent the sports lane, obviously, but we also have a lady, her name is Maya Lin, who was the designer of the Vietnam Vet Memorial in Washington, D.C., and she designed that when she was an undergrad at Yale. So she was a senior at Athens when I was a freshman. So she would be in the art lane was the idea. And then Atul Gawande was a freshman when I was a senior at Athens. And he is a well-known New York Times bestselling author. He's a surgeon in Boston. He's in the Biden administration now. He's a well-known public health official. And then Bill Greer, I was in eighth grade when he was a senior at Athens. He went to Northwestern and he played football there. But he had a whole career and still does in the rock and roll industry, where he was in charge of security for all of these bands. And he was Ozzy Osbourne's manager. So you can imagine what kind of stories he might have to tell. But nevertheless, when I went back to Athens, I'm actually a professor in Indiana now, but I grew up in Athens, graduated in 1980. But when I went back to Athens, I started interviewing people about Joe in particular. Man, I realized there are so many great stories and anecdotes. We could do a whole book on Joe Burrow right now, his first 25 years, kind of a celebration of his first 25 years. So I approached his youth football coach, Sam Smathers, about that to join me in this project. And he was gung-ho about it. Robin and Jimmy, Joe's parents, got on board. And so, yeah, I wrote it last summer, and it was just delivered to the publisher a few days ago.
Are you still writing your other book?
It's in the queue, so we shall okay. We shall see. I still have interest in that, so we'll see.
All right. I mean, there is just massive interest in Joe Burrow, and you know, in some ways, I feel like I know everything about him, mm-hmm. but in other ways, I know that we don't. So I'm excited to really kind of get into it, and hear like the secret side of Joe.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories. You know, some of these stories have been told, but it's never been, Jason, as you were saying, it's never been put together as an actual biography from beginning to end. And then the book, you know, starts with an introduction. Joe in his high school championship game, his football team at Athens High School went to the championship game and lost in the final seconds. And that was a very disappointing moment for him. But that's how it starts. And then the first chapter talks about his parents and their background, and then the transition from Fargo, North Dakota to Athens when Joe was in second grade. And then there's a chapter with lots of stories with him playing youth sports with his buddies, basketball, baseball, and football. So yeah, there's a lot of fun stories in the book for sure.
Scott, you one of the stories you did tell in the book, is you talked about a disappointment for Joe Burrow after his youth baseball team lost, I believe it was a tournament. And I think you talked about, you know, the umpiring wasn't particularly well called.
Yeah.
But I think it's a story that really captures who Joe Burrow is today as an adult and as a leader of a football team and a community. And can you share that story? And, you know, I think people will say, oh, yeah, that's him today.
Yeah, this is elementary school Joe, and he's playing travel baseball with his buddies. And they, as you said, Jason, very good team. They barely lost a game, but they went to this one tournament. And they felt they got homered. I mean, the home plate umpire was calling strikes that were literally like a foot off the plate. And it turned out that the home plate umpire was the brother of the other team's head coach. So they did apparently get homered. So they got a second place trophy. And one of the teammates immediately threw it into the trash can in the dugout. And then another teammate broke it in half. Joe, however, was just stoic. And he just went home. And later that night, Robin, his mother, called the head baseball coach and said, I don't know if I should be proud of Joe or disturbed, but he's been sitting in his room for the last 2 hours, just dissecting that trophy piece by piece by piece. And then he tossed it in the trash can. So I think that tells us something about Joe's disdain for second place. I mean, he's very committed, very competitive from a young age. You know, he's not a bad sport, you know, but very committed to being at the top of the mountain. And you see this from a very, very young age.
Well, but I also think it speaks to, and this is what I took from that story, mm-hmm. is I think it speaks to his nature of, like, he's not going to show anyone up. He's not going to show an umpire or a referee or a coach or a teammate or an opponent. He's going to go and he's going to, behind closed doors and the way he deals with it, handle it in the right manner that he can handle it. And then when he is out on the field or in public, he's not going to embarrass anyone or himself. And to me, like, that's how he is as the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. He's a guy who is positive about his teammates, is positive about the organization, is positive about the city, doesn't throw referees under the bus. And even when he's asked tough questions, he always has sort of the right answer how he handles, the game's not called very well, or a teammate makes a mistake, or a teammate's not playing well, or he himself doesn't play well. He always handles it with grace and good sportsmanship.
Yeah, you're right. That's another great takeaway. Another one would be just how surgical he is and how steady he is. You know, the fact that he was stoic in that moment, that he, as you said, he didn't allow his emotions to get the better of him. But even when he went back to his room, right, it's like he's doing surgery and he's very just focused on it. I think that says something about his personality, just so even keeled and kind of laser focused.
Did his parents give you any insight into where that inner competitiveness comes through? Because you can see that about him. And as like a mother, you like wonder, like, are your children born with it? Do you do something to, you know, give your child that edge? Like, did they give you insight about where it's from?
Well, Joe has, you know, his father, you know, played, he was a very good player, football player at the University of Nebraska. And then he went on and played in the NFL briefly. And then he had a very nice career in the CFL. And then, of course, he's had a great coaching career. So, you know, his father is a very competitive person by nature. But he has two older brothers. So his father from a previous marriage. So when he was born, his older brothers were already like high school age. And so they were super competitive. Both of them played at the University of Nebraska. So from the earliest days, I mean, the whole family was about competition, about being your best, about athletics and that sort of thing. And Robin did say that their family vacations are insane. Everything has to be a competition, whether it's ping pong or it's paddle ball, you know, or whatever it is. It's just nonstop competition. So I think he just got it from a very early age. I don't know how much of that is DNA and how much of it's environment, but certainly there's a lot of environment there.
But do you think, You being a Southeast Ohio native, and, you know, obviously particularly an Athens guy, how did that help you? You interviewed over 60 people for this book. which is just exhaustive and fantastic research. And you spend a lot of time with Joe Burrow's mom and dad. How do you feel like you connected with the book from as an Athens native yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that made a big difference for me personally. You know, I'm a university professor. I have my summers off. I do some online teaching, but that's when I do my writing. And so I knew that I had to get this written in, you know, 5 months, you know, which is a tall order for a book that's over 300 pages. It has close to 800 citations in it. But it was a labor of love for me because this is my community. I care very much about Athens. I care about Southeast Ohio. You know, my dad was the first city recreation director in Athens. He held that role for 16 years. Youth tackle football was formalized under my dad's tenure and direction. It went away for a while when there were some people in the community that were concerned about head injuries. But then my co-author, Sam Smathers, brought it back. So I thought that was kind of fun, you know, to have that connection between me and Sam. A lot of people I interviewed, actually, I went to high school with. And that was one of the things I was surprised by, was how integrated many of the people I went to high school were into Joe's life, that were part of his inner circle. I mean, one of them actually coached 400 of Joe's youth football. Youth basketball and baseball games growing up. Another girl that I went to high school with, now a lady, got Joe addicted to caramel apple suckers, which became a pregame ritual for him all the way through the LSU years. You know, we had the same elementary school principal, separated by 35 years. So for me, it got me back in touch in many ways with my roots. And so, you know, it was a holistic sort of experience for me. So a very immersive experience for me. But I also think because I'm an Athens guy and I grew up in Athens, Joe has a very tight circle that protects him of family and friends, a very tight circle. And it's hard to penetrate that. I do wonder, you know, if I were from New York or Chicago and I really had no organic connection to Athens, if I'd had been given the same access. And so I think that was part of the story, too, to be able to, you know, write it from the perspective of someone who, to some degree, was an insider. And so, yeah, I think growing up in Athens made a big difference.
So
go ahead.
Sure. Do we know that the caramel apple lollipops aren't still part of the ritual? Because, you know, maybe that's the good luck charm and we've never known this yet.
Yeah, well, Jimmy did say he doesn't do it any longer, that it did end. He didn't give me a lot of detail, but I know Joe is super health conscious. You know, he's got a nutritionist, you know, he's got a chef and those sorts of things. So he pays a lot of attention to it. So maybe he's outgrown it. I mean, there's a lot of things he hasn't outgrown. I mean, he games with his buddies, you know, from high school on Monday nights. He still does that when he's not playing Monday night football. And a lot of these friends, you know, he's had since second grade. I mean, think about that. I mean, how many NFL quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, are that committed to their hometown friends? But I think for Joe, he's an introverted guy, very private guy, doesn't really love the limelight, which is a bit of a paradox, if you will, because he's getting so much attention. And I think he is coming out of his shell a little bit more, but he still has a little bit of social anxiety going out in public, loves the fans, loves all the support, but it's a little much for him. But yeah, I think, you know, staying connected to Athens, to his buddies, all of that keeps him really grounded. And so he's got a great team around him that keeps him level-headed, but I think he also just has the right mindset too.
Did you make an attempt to try and talk to him for the book, or did you just know that that wasn't where he was at right yet?
I interviewed Jimmy for 2 hours at the country club in Athens last March, so 13 months ago. And 2 hours, he gave me so many great stories, and that was part of what led me to believe, wow, this could be a full-fledged book. And the last thing I asked Jimmy was, all right, what's the best way to, you know, get some time with Joe? And Jimmy just kind of laughed. I mean, Jimmy's very humble, very nice guy, easy to talk to. But he says, you know what? Joe just doesn't do these sit downs. Rarely does these sit downs. He says he doesn't even do it with Peter King. If you know anything about Peter King and his history, he started with the Inquirer. Well, he went to OU and then he started with the Inquirer. And now he's probably considered the best NFL writer out there. But he doesn't even sit down. So he said, don't take it personally. But I did try. You know, I contacted his marketing representative. Everything goes through his marketing representative. And the reality is, by the time I started writing this, I mean, Joe was already focused on the training camp and all that. And I wanted to respect that. So I really leaned into, you know, the voices of Athens. And then I did my research on Joe. I probably watched every press conference he's ever done. I read hundreds of articles, you know, that he had been interviewed for through the years. And so, you know, I'm somebody who's a professor. I've got a PhD. I've done that type of research. I kind of thrive on that research. So I kind of enjoyed it. So Joe's voice, I think, is very strong in the book. But my co-author, Sam Smathers, does have a personal relationship with Joe, stays in touch with him. Joe was just at his house a couple weeks ago when he was back visiting in the plains and in Athens. So there was a conduit to Joe there. And then I spoke to several of his best friends. One time I was on the phone with one of his best friends, Zakiya Saltzman, and Joe was on the other line. And we were talking about music, and we were talking about a soundtrack kind of to their childhood. And Zakiya was trying to confirm certain songs that were earmarked to when Joe was learning how to drive or when they were going to basketball practice and things like that. So that was kind of fun.
So he knew you were doing this.
He did. And he, from the very beginning, he approved it. And his parents approved it. And so that was important, you know, for me and for Sam. You know, we wanted to make sure Team Burrow was happy with this book. I mean, that was the top priority. And so Robin and Jimmy were reading it as I was writing it. So I would write a chapter and I would send it to Jimmy and they would read it and offer feedback. And so they were giving feedback all the way through. And by all indications, they're very happy with it. But we also wanted to make sure that Athens County was well represented in the book, too. So those were kind of the two priorities as we were working on the project.
What's a good non-sports related story that you came across with Joe?
He was a great athlete.
Maybe they don't realize this. He was also a great baseball and basketball player.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sports was everything.
Sports was everything for him. I'll answer that in a roundabout way if you don't mind. One of the great sources, I had so many great people to talk to, but one of the great sources for this book, his name's Tom Vandervan. And Tom was one of his youth sports coaches, basketball and baseball. But Tom is also a brilliant mind. He is a professor at Ohio University. He's a sociologist. And he read the manuscript too and gave me feedback as I was writing it. But he said that Joe got integrated into Athens through sports in second grade. And they went from baseball to football to basketball. And all the families were the same. And so sports and community and family are all wrapped up together. And it's hard to extricate those things. And so when Joe goes to Ohio State, you know, he sees those guys as not just teammates. You know, he sees them as family members. When he goes to LSU, same thing. When he goes to the Bengals, the same thing. So how he got integrated into Athens and sports being part of community and family, I think that is part of who Joe is, and it's in his DNA. And you can see it in the cultures that he's helped create in every locker room. These guys are brothers. They're family members. You know, they're not just co-workers. And I think that intangible means a lot. But here's a non-sports story. So that senior class at Athens, the boys and the girls, very strong athletes and very connected, about 20 or 30 of them, they would hang out, do all sorts of things together in this large group. I think they had 21 or 22 that got college athletic scholarships in a small school. You know, Jason, you know, Athens. Yeah, that's a large number. And so, but they were very, very connected. And one athlete, Dominique Dosic, who went on and played basketball at OU, and she actually played on the boys' travel team all the way up to through sixth grade. She was one of the better players on the team. She told me this story that there were pranks. You know how it is with a senior. You get senioritis, right? And yeah, you go to class, but you also have these pranks. He said the football players were having races in trash cans. Through the hallways, and everyone, all the teachers stopped, even the principal was watching, and Joe was in a trash can, and it got all the way to the finish line by the cafeteria, and he got dumped out, and I think won the race at the end. But a really good guy, just a fun guy. I mean, I was told that you would never know, of course, he was the big man on campus, but you would never know it, because he would have lunch with anybody. He would walk with anybody in the hallway. There was a student that had multiple disabilities. He would walk that student from class to class. I think that kind of indicates how supremely inclusive Joe is and what kind of heart he has. Even though he's kind of an introverted guy, he's got a huge heart.
No doubt. And I'm not surprised to hear that about him at all. It just says a lot about him. And the one thing I want.
Go ahead, Jay. Sorry.
The one thing I really want to ask you is, you know, as a Southeast Ohio native yourself and having spent a lot of time there, and we all know the struggles of that area, Joe Burrow means a lot to that area, not just Athens County, but the whole region. Just from your perspective, what do you see that he means to that area?
Yeah, he means a lot. I would say there were two words that I would use for this book. It has all the great athletic glory, the gridiron glory and the basketball stuff and the baseball stuff, which is wonderful. But the two words I would use to describe this book are family, which I've already talked about, and hope. If you go back to Joe's Heisman speech in 2019, a lot of people think that's the greatest Heisman speech ever given. And I can't, I've watched it so many times, but I still can't watch it without kind of tearing up. When I'm watching,
watch it. I like watch it myself, then I showed it to my son. Then my husband was like, "Why? What?" And I was like, "Let's watch it again." And like, it's amazing.
It is amazing, and if you watch it from the moment in which his name is announced and he stands up, and he greets his fellow finalists. Two of them are Ohio State guys, right? And he greets them, gives them hugs, and of course, he graduated from Ohio State in 3 years. And so he didn't just transfer. He was a graduate of Ohio State. So he still feels very connected to Ohio State, even though he never really got on the field much. But he gets up, he hugs them. He goes across the aisle and he greets his mother. And they're all mic'd up so you can hear what they're saying, right? And his mom's already in tears at this point. So he hugs her and then he hugs his dad, and then Coach O, and he goes down the line and he greets all of his coaches, gives a kiss to his longtime girlfriend. He goes back down that line. And these little things, you pay attention to. He grabs his mother's hand, right? One last time. Then he goes across the aisle and he hugs the Ohio State guys, the coaches. Ryan Day's there, the strength coach is there. Then he goes up and he starts speaking. But right there, even before he says a word, you can see how connected he is to all these people. So he has a hard time getting through and he's breaking down and it's, from the heart, but he spends 31 seconds. That's really the most important part of the speech, I think, for the people from Southeast Ohio. 31 seconds talking about food insecurity and the poverty rate in Athens County. And he says, he went to school with a lot of these guys who would go home and not have a whole lot on their plate, and not knowing exactly where the next meal is going to come from. He says, you guys can be up here with me, right? And we know this story that within a week, $500,000 are donated to the Athens County Food Pantry within a week, unsolicited, right? So you have these independent fundraisers on Facebook and on other forms of social media that are popping up. I talked to the person who runs the food pantry when I was writing the book. She said the annual budget is $70,000. And within a week, they got, $500,000. And now there's, $2 million that have been donated. And there's a separate foundation that Joe and his family have started called the Joe Burrow Foundation, which, by the way, there are proceeds from the book that are going to the Joe Burrow Foundation. But all that to say, they have a lot of money now, right, for Athens. And they're starting to share the wealth around Southeast Ohio. So it's not just in Athens. And Robin, his mom, is a principal at a small elementary school in Meigs County. At Eastern Elementary School. And she's a strong advocate for her kids and also kids in Southeast Ohio. She's been to the state capitol a couple times trying to get, more attention down in Southeast Ohio. And they're starting to get a lot of traction because of it. So I think, he represents not only Athens, but all of Southeast Ohio in a strong way, because he grew up there and it means a lot to him. And he continues to give back.
So, think that's one of the most amazing things about him. Did you also get any insight into, it's one thing to be competitive. It's one thing to be good at sports. It's one thing to be a good person inside, but he's also a leader at such a young age. I mean, just watching him, I feel like he leads not only the team, but sets an example in Cincinnati and he's become a leader in Cincinnati. And he's so young. Do you really kind of get a window into like how that came about?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you a couple things that might give us, a window, some insight into Joe being a leader from a young age. As I said before, Joe was certainly privileged, to be in a family that was a sports family. By the time he was five, he'd been, to major championships. I mean, he had an older brother that played for the national title with Miami at Nebraska. They got beat by, but he'd been to that game. He'd been to Arena Bowl championships because his dad coached the Iowa Barnstormers, which is where he met Kurt Warner. Of course, we know Kurt Warner's story, who goes on to become an NFL Hall of Fame quarterback. But they started out together, so he's a family friend. But they know all of these guys, that have played in Super Bowls, won Super Bowl. I mean, Joe, by the time he's five, is in this environment, right? He's got these competitive older brothers, competitive dad. So when he becomes the quarterback, when he's anointed the quarterback in third grade by Sam Smathers, it's because his football knowledge is off the charts. And he really is kind of has a defensive mindset. So as a quarterback, he can see what the defense is doing. This is in third grade, right? So he's already mentally, maybe not physically, but mentally way ahead of the game at that point. So it's natural that other people, his peers, I think, would gravitate to him as a leader because he's seeing things that they're not seeing. He's putting them in position and so forth. He's doing it more by example as opposed to being a real rah-rah talkative guy. That's just not who he is. But from an early age, I think he was put in that position and he recognized that he certainly saw things that others weren't seeing. He also just had, this ice cold mentality. I'll give you a story playing basketball, third grade. The team is playing in the state championship in Columbus and they're down by 8 points, 30 seconds to go. They're down by 8 points. Joe takes over the game and they win that game. He scores 9 points in 30 seconds. He's stealing the ball, making layups, getting fouled, going to the free throw line, draining these free throws. And the coaches are on the sidelines with their jaws just agape. They're not coaching. They're just in awe of this third grader who has somehow taken over the game. I mean, when you do things like that, exploits like that, it's going to be very natural for, I think, your teammates to see you as a leader. I'll also mention, though, that Athens, Jason, you'll know this. It's Appalachia, but it's also where Ohio University is. And so you have a lot of diversity there. I mean, you've got students from all over the country that come to Athens and are part of that culture. You've got 120 different countries that are represented on that college campus. So Joe's on that campus a lot because his dad is a football coach. So he's over there a lot. And I mentioned Zakiya Saltzman, one of his best friends again. And Zakiya was saying he really thinks that Joe's ability to lead has a lot to do with the diversity of Athens. You learn how to relate to people who are different than you in different ways. You try to find what is that common ground? What is that touch point? How are they wired? What is their temperament? I think that's part of what Joe does in the locker room. He recognizes he can't relate to each teammate in the same way. He has to find a touch point, has to figure out what is the best way to motivate them. What is the best way to build a bridge to them? He's an expert at that. But I think growing up in Athens that does have surprising diversity in it has contributed to Joe being able to do that in all the locker rooms he's been in.
Yeah, you make a great point, Scott. And I know people sort of look at that part of the state and think, it's just a bunch of, Hicks over there or whatever. But, Athens is certainly a different, it's a unique town in Southeast Ohio. I do want to ask you this. You did talk about in the book that he lost one regular season game in high school as a starter. 3-year starter for the Athens Bulldogs as the quarterback. What was that? That was his very first game as a starter. Well, what was that like for him to lose his first game and never lose again in the regular season?
Yeah. So as a freshman, none of the freshmen really played on varsity. This particular group was really strong, and they had shown that. And Ryan Adams, the head coach, I think wanted to keep them together so that they could grow together, that they could continue to build that muscle memory together, that chemistry together. So he played, I think, one game as a freshman on varsity as a defensive back, but not as a quarterback. And then entering into his sophomore year, he was in a quarterback battle with a senior. Michael Germano was his name. Michael's dad, Pete Germano, actually was a coach, a defensive coach, defensive line coach for the OU Bobcats. So he was working for Jimmy, who was the defensive coordinator. Well, he took a job at Fresno State, so he was now gone. So now the job is Joe's, right? So there's no quarterback competition. So he's starting as a sophomore, first game, and they come out like gangbusters in the first half. And they're playing this team from Gallia Academy, the Blue Devils of Gallia Academy. And so they're ahead. Never heard of them, right, Jason? So they're running this wide open offense. They're scoring points, and the Athens fans, you know, are like, wow, this is new. I mean, this is really kind of fun and exciting. But the second half, Gallia Academy did come back, and they fought back and won that game. And so Joe did lose that game. They went on, as you said, to win every regular season game for the sophomore year, junior year, and senior year.
Amazing.
Did not lose another regular season game. And they started winning all these playoff games. Athens had never, in football, had never won a playoff game until Joe's sophomore year. And his sophomore and junior year, they made it to the regional finals, lost both of those games. So their goal their senior year was, we've got to win region. And every time they would lift, every time they would leave the field, you know, they would say regional championship, you know. And, of course, they did win the regional championship, and then they made it to the Final Four and then made it to the Horseshoe and came within seconds of winning the state title. But Joe was Mr. Football that senior year. And I will tell you a story about that, too, very quickly. So Joe finds out that he's the guy senior year. He is Mr. Football in the state of Ohio. And so he's being interviewed. And so after the interview, this Associated Press offers this, presents that. He says, when do I get my trophy? And the guy that was interviewing him says, well, you don't get a trophy. You just get the title. And Joe's like, what? I get a title? I don't get a trophy for being the best player in the state? You know, in his mind, he's like, I got a trophy, you know, when I was in won the second place, right, you know, tournament when I was in second grade. And so at any rate, he went home, told his parents, and his parents said, all right, it's all right, we'll make you a trophy. So they went down to a place on State Street in Athens called Zones, and they actually had a Ohio Mr. Football trophy made, and it was presented to the boroughs, and they put it on the mantle. And so it's still there, part of their cherished
nice.
in the cherished trophy room alongside the Heisman trophy now.
Oh, that's great.
That is great.
Well, this has been, I think I did want to ask you this, and it's not about Joe Burrow, but maybe for long time Ohio sports fans, your cousin is Jay Burson, who was a fantastic basketball player at Ohio State in the mid to late 80s. He's your first cousin?
No, he's more of a second or third cousin.
Okay.
So it's not like we're real close, but my dad was a coach. Of course, Jay's dad was a coach at Muskingum. So my dad did know him. Jay had a remarkable career at Ohio State. He's an All-American, you know, very slight guy. I was a contemporary. I was a little bit ahead of him. I played at Rio Grande, which is in Gallia County, as you know. So yeah. I was number 12 for the Redmen. They're now the Red Storm. A couple of years before, Jay was number 12 with Ohio State. So I like to tell people he stole the number from me because I had it first.
I love it. This has been fantastic. Can you share about how the book's out now? It just came out. Can you share how people can get it and you know where to get it at?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's published by Orange Fraser Press out of Wilmington, Ohio, and they've published a number of Bengals, Buckeyes, Reds books. I mean, they've done a Johnny Bench book. They did Chad Johnson's biography. So this is kind of in their wheelhouse. So they did a beautiful job on the book. You can order it through their website, but perhaps the easiest thing to do is just to go to Amazon. It is on Amazon right now. So from Bulldog to Bengal, if you search it on Amazon, you'll find it.
Awesome. Do you know, will it be available in any bookstores as well, Barnes & Noble or here locally or Joseph Beth? Or?
Yes, it will be. I mean, it'll be available in all those places. I have a book signing June 3rd, actually, at Joseph Beth in Cincinnati and a number of others around the area. So I think it's in the afternoon on June 3rd at Joseph Beth. But, you know, the Bengals have been very supportive as well. They're selling it in the pro shop at the stadium. And
Oh, great.
Yeah, and Dan Hoard has interviewed me on his podcast, and Jeff Hobson wrote a nice article as well. So, yeah, very supportive, and so very thankful for the Bengals supporting this project.
Love it. Scott, thanks so much. Again, that's Bulldog to Bengal. You can get that on Amazon.com. It's going to be available at Joseph Beth. We'll look forward to your success, and congratulations on the book, and thank you so much. I know you're getting slammed right now. We just had you on WLW the other day with interviews, and thanks so much for doing this, and for what you, to me, this is a you did this project in a lot of ways. You shared about Southeast Ohio as well, and I think you're a great representative of that area, and just want to thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, well, of course, Jason, I think you are as well, and Sherry, no, I'm not thanks. Sure where you're from. But it's been a pleasure talking to you today as well.
I'm a Youngstown girl, and my dad was a high school football coach, so I get
Well, my roommate, Araya Grand, was from Austintown Fitch. He was an Austintown Fitch graduate.
Boardman for me.
So arch rival, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it's
Thank
been a pleasure.
You.
Thanks again to Scott Burson for joining us here today. I could talk to him as a Southeast Ohio native myself. I could spend hours and hours talking to him, and he's a great storyteller, and he's done a fantastic job on this project with Joe Burrow. And I think he's done Joe Burrow and certainly Southeast Ohio and Athens very proud. Well,
I have one quick question. Are you a Blue Devil? There seems to be a reference there.
The high school that Joe Burrow, the only team that he lost to in the regular season in high school is my high school. So,
I just wanted to double check. We want all the facts but to I just, straight here.
I more so it's not about me. I just wanted to hear the story of the fact he only lost one game in all of his high school career, and how he bounced back from that, because that was his first game of high school. So. Or his first game as the starting quarterback. But Sherry, just like old times, I get to ask you about our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. I know you have something up your sleeve, so drum roll, what is it?
I want to talk about a little bit of women empowerment here at the end. Last night, I went to the opening of a new activewear store in Over the Rhine for women. It's called Me, but if you're driving by it, it's across from the Eagle. It looks like M-E-A-S, but it's pronounced Me. And it's by, there's a woman, she went to college here. Her name is Erin Roddy, grew up here on the West Side, moved to New York City, and really, got into the fashion industry, and herself started running. And she just thought that, this was a lane for her to do this activewear line of clothing. She did it in New York City for a while, but she decided to come home to her roots, like all good That's So Cincinnatians. And she opened up a store in Over the Rhine, and I'm actually now calling it Boutique Row after going there last night and seeing how many. There's really some good shopping in Over the Rhine. If you're a woman, it's been a minute since we've really talked about all of that. It's a different podcast, different story. But I just wanted to let people know that that store is there. She was inspired by this trip to Cambodia where she met all of these women. M-E-A-S in Cambodian means golden. And that's where she took the name from. And I was really blown away. That's great quality. It was a beautiful boutique, but it's just, this is what, Cincinnati is.
That's cool. I love that. And I think that's really, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you think of that area so much for the restaurants and the great restaurants, and the fact there are some really great small business shops there. I think it's good to highlight that. Maybe this is a dumb question. Did you buy anything?
Oh, Jay, of course I did. You know what, though? But, you know, it's hybrid work, right? You get dressed up, go to City Hall, but athleisure other days. She's in the perfect lane, I think, for 2023 for sure, where activewear is just really a big part of everyone's wardrobe. Now, I do feel like I'm not our, you know, listeners may not know this, but you've been always a leader in this category with your wardrobe.
Well, it's funny because one of our editors was in last week and in the office, and she walks by me, you know, wearing a hoodie and like athleisure. And she's like, ah, you know, it's Friday. And I was like, or every day for me. So, so I was like, doesn't bother me at all. You know, like, I don't know, post pandemic. It is funny to think we were talking about how there's just a whole industry now of clothes that are designed for you to, you know, at leisure for you to wear, you know, at work instead of, you know, traditional work attire that we think of, you know, that we used to think of anyway.
No, anyway, you want that's it to awesome. Be cute too. If you're going to wear it into the office, and people do, like, I'm sorry. I know a lot of women in different industries in Cincinnati who do this, and you want it to be cute at leisure. And Aaron is really bringing that to us. Cause you you can't throw on sweats like, and go, but you can wear cute at leisure for sure to work.
That's awesome. Sherry, it's always fun to, come back on the podcast, fill in for Burl, and, you know, we have a lot of fun, and, you know, hey, I'll look forward to next time, Burl's, you know, can't do it or whatever. And, you'll send me a message and I'll say, absolutely. Let's get back together. And,
I love it too. We had two close back-to-back ones, but it is that time of year.
Yeah. And by the way, like, thanks to listeners and readers for all the feedback and engagement on the, Colleen Hannich, I got a lot of emails on that, and we wrote two stories, and I wrote a column off of it. So I really enjoyed that interview with the Xavier president. So if you missed that, go back a couple episodes ago and check that out, because I think
it was really inspiring women.
Absolutely. Exactly. You couldn't have said it any better. So anyway, thanks so much. Thanks for listening. And you can catch this podcast with Burl and Sherry next week.